Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
Cindy, do you remember back in the day?
Yes.
Now that we're not kids
I remember
anymore.
What it was like back in the day.
Back
yes,
in the day.
Very well.
Did you ever get a ticket in the 80s or the, say, early 90s with many food allergies?
Zero.
Zero. So there's
I mean, literally zero.
I promise I know because that's exactly, I mean, we had zero. And that's something that's changed enormously in our culture. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about food allergies and talking to a clinical dietitian about food allergies and what's common. And I think that'll be interesting, and also talk about, you know, perspective from a restaurant, because people go to restaurants, and it would be interesting to hear some of the things that happen.
Okay, yeah.
Second segment, we'll be talking about cocktails.
Mm-hmm. Yummy.
So
that's much
slightly
more
cheery than slightly more cheery.
Sounds
than
like a lot more fun allergies. Than allergies. Yes.
Third segment is where you cry.
No.
It's
a chef's challenge. I think that you are going to cry mostly because of the situation that I'm going to put you
perfect.
In where you're cooking.
I'm not concerned about your situation.
Yes, you will be. You will be cooking over a campfire.
As long as I have pants,
start thinking
I'm really
about
not
it
concerned.
Now.
So we have with us today for our food allergy discussion Amy Chen, who's a registered dietitian at Howard County General Hospital. Amy, how are you?
Hey, Amy.
Hi, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
At the hospital, you have to run into all kinds of complicated stuff on a consistent basis, I'm sure.
Definitely. We see a fair amount of patients from common allergies to some diverse ones as well.
So I'm gonna ask you the silly questions because I love lists. What are the five most common allergies that you run into? And then I'm going to ask you for what are the five most obscure ones you run into?
Sure. So I think the five most common we have shellfish, tree nuts, peanuts, milk, and we also have people with celiac disease, so allergy to gluten. And then the more uncommon ones, some of them are more like food intolerances. I just had a patient the other day who was sensitive to like tomatoes, olive oil, and citrus fruits.
That's all one patient?
That was all one patient, sensitive to a lot of different foods, yeah.
That sounds like sensitive to the Mediterranean.
Yes.
So in restaurants, we always deal with people's allergies and requests and different issues. What do you think is important for if we have a guest who has an allergy, has an issue or an intolerance, what do you think is the best way for them to tell us so we can correctly do what it is that they need?
Yeah, I think people with food allergies have to be really cautious. You know, I think when they dine out especially, they should definitely tell the server or the manager that they have the food allergy, and if there's like a menu with nutrition information, definitely getting that so they can see exactly what's in the food, and maybe a food can be prepared like a certain way to avoid the possibility of having an allergic reaction.
Yeah, we always try to adapt.
Yeah,
I'm sure that a lot of people
seriously.
Try to adapt. Mm-hmm. You become a little bit jaded when you hear things that are incongruous once in a while. Like I've heard a guest say that they're allergic to pepper, pepper. And is that possible?
Yeah, I think it is possible, but oftentimes it's more of a intolerance, I think, rather than a true food allergy. So that's something that I get asked a lot too, whether it's a true food allergy or if it's a intolerance or a sensitivity. So the main difference is that with the food allergy, there's actually a immune response to the food. So the reaction is usually a lot more severe, like anaphylaxis or getting hives or swelling. And it's usually much more immediate.
Mm-hmm. In our business, anaphylaxis is one of the most terrifying words you can say.
Right? Oh, exactly. Definitely. Yeah, it can be quite stressful and scary.
I've seen a couple of guests who are very smart about, like with nut allergies, or I thought they're very smart about just always having Benadryl with them. What are good habits for people with food allergies when they go out and dine?
Yeah, I think if the person has a very severe allergy, like a nut allergy, they should definitely have like their EpiPen with them just in case there's a reaction, I think, and just being really vigilant and I think always asking what is in the food, what's the ingredients, and maybe asking the, you know, speak with the chef or whoever is preparing the food. I think just being proactive and asking those questions, because sometimes, like gluten is a huge one, it's in so many different foods, sometimes things that we don't even think about. So,
can you give us some examples of what it might be in that we don't think about? Because that's good information.
Yeah, I think aside from the usual culprits, a lot of like sauces and seasonings, like soy sauce, people don't think about that one. And a lot of sauces that have like thickeners, mm-hmm. It can contain gluten. All different types of pastas, of course, but sometimes with different items, it might contain like a trace where it could possibly be made on equipment that is processing wheat, barley, rice. So I always encourage clients to read the label very carefully.
What have you seen, or maybe you studied the history of allergies, what have you seen change? Because Tony and I started the show by mentioning that when we first started working in restaurants in the 1980s, I would never get a ticket that came into the kitchen that said someone was allergic to something, and now it's very frequent. What has changed? Why? Is it awareness? Is it something that's changed in the food chain? Is it something that's changed in the environment?
Or is it a change in the population's health?
That's a really great question. I think part of it is awareness, because some people, maybe people were not aware, like gluten protein could cause a reaction. Maybe they just thought, you know, I'm just having a stomach upset or something else. You're not thinking of it as a food allergy. But I think nowadays it's more common knowledge, so that could be one. And maybe another thing could be, I think in the modern world, we're so vigilant with kind of preventing allergies that sometimes maybe like parents are introducing their kids to certain foods, or just everything is very clean, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that could maybe the change in the immune system could occur over time. If you're not being exposed to certain things, mm-hmm. You're not going to necessarily build up those antibodies to fight that off. So when there is something kind of new or foreign, it could trigger an increased response.
I feel endorsed, Amy. I have two little kids, and they both had really broad diets.
That's wonderful.
Is that the kind of thing that will make them more likely to be tolerant of things as time goes along?
Yeah, I think it's good to introduce kids to a variety of foods when they're young, and just to put that out there. The good thing is, I think now there's so many more options for people with food allergies. That's definitely a trend that I've noticed a lot. I don't think, like 10 years ago, there would be nearly as much like gluten-free products or like, you know, dairy-free products. I think in that sense, the food industry has really like stepped up and seen the need to create some of those products.
So as a dietitian, I have to ask you one question.
Yeah, sure.
What is the least healthy thing that you love to eat?
What is the least healthy thing? So that's a real funny question. So I really believe that all foods can fit in the diet. I really...
There you go. There
good
you
answer.
Go. You're a professional enabler. Good job, Amy. No, please. Please answer.
I do love those. So I love baking, and I actually have a side baking business. So I really love cupcakes and macarons.
Okay.
That's outstanding.
Are you allergic to anything?
Luckily, no.
Good, good.
So when I was younger, I actually had a slight allergy to shrimp, but I have since then grown out of it, thankfully.
Amy, how common is it? My niece has an allergy to grapes, and I mean, I've never heard of that. Is that a pretty common?
Like fresh the fruit. Like
yeah, she can't. When she was a child, she couldn't drink grape juice, so she can't have any grape product at all.
Does she happen to have like any other like seasonal allergies or anything like that?
No.
So yes, I have heard of that allergy, but more commonly, I see it with people who also have like seasonal allergies.
Mm-hmm.
There is a phenomenon, it's called oral allergy syndrome,
mm-hmm.
In which people can become like allergic to a variety of like fruits, vegetables, that share like a similar pollen source.
Okay.
To plants, like ragweed and different things like that. So sometimes they might get like itchiness around the mouth or have a reaction, but that's certainly possible. I have not heard of many like isolated instances to just that mm-hmm. one fruit alone, though. Yeah.
That's a tough one. I've never heard of anyone, but Tony, I'm sure, has run into it in the dining room or no?
You run into it.
Yeah, a little bit. But it doesn't seem like it's very common. That's what I was kind of also wondering.
Amy, speaking of common, those common allergies that people have, what are some of the more successful substitutions for, whether it's a peanut allergy or a tree nut allergy or gluten and so on?
Yeah.
On your hit list.
Sure. Gluten. So I volunteer with a nonprofit, and I volunteer as a dietitian, and I create meals for the clients there. So we have a client who is gluten-free, so weekly I have to think of, you know, which restaurants offer gluten-free options, or if I'm making the meal, what are good substitutions. So it's great because there's actually a lot more products out there now. So if I'm making like a pasta salad, I can just substitute that with a gluten-free pasta, or if we're doing sandwiches, you could do like gluten-free bread. Another one, rice is a great option that's gluten-free.
We have a lot of guests that are gluten-free that specifically come in for risotto.
Yeah, risotto is great, or like quinoa, or like other grains like that might be a little less common. Those are great, and sometimes getting creative and doing some other options, like a lot of Asian dishes, like rice noodles, those are good. You just really can get creative and find a lot of other options.
Well, thanks, Amy.
Thank you for talking with us.
Really helpful. We really appreciate it. So it's Amy Chen at Howard County General Hospital. Thanks so much.
No problem. Have a wonderful day.
It was great to talk to Amy.
Yeah, that was nice.
In the next segment, a popular topic, maybe especially with Cindy Wolf, we're going to talk to Brendan Dorr, who's the head of the Baltimore Bartenders Guild. And then the third segment is the Chef's Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be sad times.
Oh, boy. All right.
All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, you've been thinking about cocktails.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was thinking about the fact that I know that you started bartending when you were like, what, 16 years old or something. Yeah. And I mean, you just have such a long history.
And it was totally legal.
That's so crazy that you were serving
drinks at 16. Luke is looking at me like a crazy person.
Yeah,
no, lying about that.
He was tall.
I was a robust young man.
Tell me about what it was like, you know, what's the difference between, you know, what was going on back then when you were serving drinks? What was the difference? What was popular?
I mean, a lot of my customers were guys who would have been of the generation of Mad Men. I mean, there's still people having
super cool.
2 and 3 martini lunches. And
that's crazy.
And
can you imagine?
4 CC and sodas. And
wow.
And there are a couple of, I will name no names.
Of course
but,
not.
But I still remember the people and their drinks and their habits and where they wanted to sit at the bar.
That's
especially,
cool.
it's your first gig like that.
Sure.
I'd always been in the kitchen. And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, you have quick hands.
Mm-hmm.
We need somebody.
We need a bartender now.
You remember everything, so
there you go.
Put you out there. So, and I think the first party I worked was 300 people or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that was scary, I bet.
But there was some weird stuff. I mean, there were still guys that drank scotch and milk.
Ew. I didn't know that was...
One of the new innovative cocktails was Sex on the Beach.
Gosh, what was in that?
Chambord and a bunch of other mess.
Okay.
Let's talk to someone who knows what they're talking about.
Okay. That seems like a good idea, Tony.
So we have with us Brendan Doerr. He's the lead bartender at the B&O.
Mm-hmm.
Is the president and I think founder of the Baltimore Bartenders Guild. Brendan, how are you?
That is correct.
Hey, Brendan.
I am very well.
Thanks for joining us.
We started this segment, I was telling, Cindy was asking me a few questions about, I mean, I first walked behind a bar in 1980, 81. Different world from what's going on now. The last 10 years has been a giant and accelerated change. So what have you seen happening? What have been the big changes in the past, say, decade for you? And what do you think is coming down the pike?
So, as you've said, there have been a lot of big changes. I mean, from, you know, the past 10, 15, even 20 years, I mean, you can trace it back to the 80s that there were some bartenders even doing some things back then that really got us to the point we are today. What I am really seeing, the changes that I'm seeing, is levels in consistency. People across the board working hard to make sure that when a guest walks in the door, the level of consistency for cocktail preparation is at its highest level. Bartenders that are really caring about the quality of cocktails they're serving, from simple sours to very creative contemporary cocktails, consistency has definitely risen behind the bar. Fresh juices, fresh homemade ingredients, and the quality of ingredients, whether non-alcoholic or spirits, has really changed. I mean, we are seeing a constant outpouring of bitters, being like the Amari, the Italian classic Italian bitters that people are making them even here in Baltimore. So you're all across the board, you're really seeing a drastic change in the quality of ingredients that people are able to work with and are preparing themselves.
What's your favorite these days of the locally produced spirits?
Really like a lot of things that are being produced in Baltimore right now. I don't want to call out too many names, but you know, I know the guys at Baltimore Whiskey Company really well, and they're doing some great things. I'm excited to see what they do in the future. Old Line is also putting out some nice rums and their single malts. And, you know, even Sagamore. I mean, they, you know, we can't forget Sagamore. They're the new big kid in town. And they, it's really going to be cool to see what they do in the future. Obviously, they have the ability to do some things that some of the smaller producers might not be able to do as quickly as they can. So it'll really be interesting to see in the next few years where we are in comparison to now.
So what are the drinks that, from when you started to now, that you've seen fall off that were popular calls or, you know, popular mixed drinks or cocktails that you rarely get a call for now?
Well, I mean, every bar and restaurant that is looking to make their mark obviously opens with a cocktail menu as part of the offerings that they're providing their guests with. So, you know, that really obviously makes people transition away from their favorites. But things that you're not seeing as much anymore, I mean, I still get calls for them, but less frequently. The Cosmopolitan, it is definitely a classic contemporary cocktail. Every bartender should know how to make a very good classic cosmopolitan. But it's just, it's not getting the play as much anymore because people are creating similar type sours that people are really enjoying. Vodka, just trend of vodka in general, has fallen off a lot. Everyone is drinking whiskey these days, and then, you know, go down the line from gin to mezcal and so on. There are just so many great spirits out there that people are really, they are returning to flavor.
Yeah, that does seem to be a big trend, especially with whether it's a spirit or with bitters or how things are seasoned.
You talk about quality of product. I think it's pretty exciting to see the amount of mise en place and the freshness, as you said, of the product and the quality of the product. I mean, sometimes I think bartenders are having almost as much mise en place in some of their stations as maybe our Garmager station does in the kitchen. It's kind of interesting. It's almost like they're cooking back there.
Oh, absolutely. And some of them are cooking, mm-hmm. you know, from preparation of their ingredients, so, you know, cooking syrups or... just heating things up in different ways. It's really a fun time to be behind the bar and see changes that are happening.
What's happening with, you know, talk about a little bit about making your own ice cubes, dry ice, flaming drinks. And the flaming drinks, that's not something new, but it's definitely something that, you know, sort of died off and it's coming back and it seems really popular right now.
Yeah, well, I think you're seeing a lot of, obviously, people are flaming their twists. They're using like a brulee torch to something we do at our bar. We use brulee torches to pair spices like cinnamon sticks mm-hmm. for hot toddies. So you get a little bit of a kind of warmed up torched aroma.
And honestly, there's so much mise en place going into the drinks. I just think that's kind of fascinating how complicated a drink can be now and how much prep it takes to set up a station.
Oh, absolutely. I think there is a lot of thought that goes into the mise en place. There are a lot of different schools of thought, whether the garnish should be edible or whether it should just be something decorative. Some people really like simple garnishes, whereas some are doing much more complicated ones. But even the most simple garnish can be executed at a really high level, whether through knife skills to trim your lemon and orange peels, mm-hmm. Maybe put a cut in it to put it on the glass in a specific way so it decoratively enhances the glass.
I like this whole thing with the ice cubes being cut, either formed, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. You know, one of the first times I had I had visited Charleston many years ago, and I went to a place there called the Gin Joint, and it was the first time I saw anybody have a cocktail that had this gigantic ice cube in it, and he was having whiskey. And, you know, it's just kind of fascinating that every aspect of it is a little bit like, you know, with the Riedel glassware for wine service, making sure that it's varietal correct, you know, that all of a sudden it's ice cubes correct for the type of spirit that's in the glass or the preparation.
Absolutely. I mean, we definitely use large cubes to finish off cocktails or enhance a pour of whiskey at B&O. But, you know, you see different bars that are all doing the same thing. They're getting large blocks in. They're cutting them down. People are using different molds to create different sizes and shapes of ice, from Collins cubes like the long spears mm-hmm. To just those big 2x2 squares. Obviously, we have those. You have the round molds which you can use, or just take a large solid block of ice, and those nice round molds will melt down a big square into a perfect sphere, which is really wonderful and fun to see in a glass.
Yeah, where do you think we're going in the future? What's down the pike? What do you think the changes are coming?
It's so hard to tell these days. I keep trying to suggest that I think the next big whiskey trend that we will see will be Irish, mm-hmm. Just because Ireland went from having thousands of distilleries to having two distilleries, and now we're starting to see distilleries reopen in the past few years. I think don't quote me on this, but somewhere around 10 or so that are now open, but they're opening so quickly that I think in the next couple of years we're going to see a lot of new Irish distilleries and a lot of really new, fun Irish whiskey to be drinking. It's definitely something that either you like Irish whiskey or it might be a little too soft for your palate.
Yeah.
But I'm really starting to taste some great Irish whiskey.
So how did they go from 1,000 distilleries down to two? What was that, after World War II? Or When did that happen?
Yeah, a few things hurt it. English tax law really hurt Irish whiskey. They're always heavily taxing Irish whiskey to collect on taxes. And then prohibition also hurt Irish whiskey. While it was being smuggled into the U.S. during prohibition, it didn't do it any favors because now it just couldn't be very regularly imported into the United States. And then just slowly, I think because of prohibition killing off so many distilleries here, it just took a while for a resurgence to happen. I mean, before prohibition, cocktails were all the rage. Bartenders were making cocktails with fresh ingredients, mm-hmm. and pushing the envelope with cocktails. Then look how long it took from the 1930s until nearly the past. You can kind of guesstimate around the 80s, 90s is when you started seeing things happening with cocktails, but not until about 60 years.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, the same thing happened to the cheese producers in Great Britain, particularly after World War II. So many of them went out of business because of the war. But that's interesting. I didn't realize prohibition had that effect on Irish.
It's interesting. I've watched with whiskey, since you're talking about whiskey, I had an interesting experience. I went into a bar, which I don't always do. And I went into a bar that was intended to be a speakeasy and had very much that feel. And I have pretty good knowledge, and I didn't recognize a number of things behind the bar, which is fine, which is cool, which is interesting to learn about. But then I did the very strange thing of asking, did they have any malt whiskey or Scotch malt whiskey? And they genuinely had zero.
Interesting.
And yeah, I was amazed. Does no one care anymore about that sort of a...
About Scotch whiskeys, like malt Scotch whiskey? I think people do. And also, I think
it's just a lot more savory, I guess, than a lot of the things that are being drunk these days.
Yeah, there's so much selection to choose from. And depending on what type of bar you're trying to run, as far as what you want to feature and focus on at your bar, much like a wine program, while you might have a big, extensive spirit selection behind your bar, it might just be that bar isn't featuring something like Scotch malt.
Yeah, I was just surprised. Surprised. That just it really, frankly, that everyone was drinking cocktails and that wasn't even behind the bar. I'm like, whoa, things have changed in a very significant way. And I thought that was interesting.
I like to have a selection of a wide selection behind my bar, just so there is something for everyone. If you come in and you want a light beer, we will have some kind of a light beer. If you want to come in and you want to have a scotch, we will have a small selection of scotch.
It's good to know that I can come and see you for a scotch.
There you go.
We do have a nice selection of scotch.
That's great. Well, I know people enjoy the cocktails that you make as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we only have one segment to go on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. Going to have to step out of the studio and get a box of tissues for Cindy.
Okay.
This is the time for suffering.
Here
it's the chef's challenge. All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So Cindy, we talked about allergies in the first segment.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get through a little bit of information before the suffering starts.
You mean with the chef's challenge?
With the chef's challenge,
okay, not with the food allergies.
Yeah. And if anyone missed the first segment, they can go to the WIPR website, look for the Foreman & Wolf page, download the podcast of this program or any other program that we've done to listen to the first segment on food allergies or the second segment on cocktails. So in your kitchen, how do you like to deal with food allergies when you become aware of them?
I just, the best information I can get is what makes me take the best care of the guest. So when I know exactly what all the issues are, and then we do every single thing we can to protect the guest in every way. Hands are washed immediately, you know, knives, if any kind of tool that's used that might have handled, say, shellfish from another dish, then we get new tools out, clean tools. So we do, really, honestly, we get new bowls. Anything that we possibly can, we do to protect the guest. So I guess, you know, and also for me, it's we're in an unusual situation where we give several gifts where I cook every day. So one of them is an hors d'oeuvre, and the guest doesn't know they're getting that. So when that hits the table, that's usually when we find out someone has an allergy. But sometimes they're talking, which makes sense. They're there to enjoy themselves, and they may not even really be paying attention when the waiter sits that down. So that's a little bit of an area where, you know, we really need the guests to, you know, speak up. You know, they're having food in front of them. Oh, gosh, yeah, does this have shellfish in it, or does this have peanut oil in it, or anything like that? Because you want to get involved in your own issue, because I can't figure that out on my own, obviously. You have to communicate with us. And then tell us everything, you know, let us know. And there's some people that have a lot of different allergies, and they have a piece of paper. That's even better for me, because when I'm busy in the middle of service, I'm calling out, you know, I could be picking up 10 tickets at a time for 25 people or more sometimes, you know, to have that piece of paper, especially if the guest has a lot of different allergies. That's extremely helpful. And I've seen that more recently than not. But I mean, you know, they don't even have to do that. It's just communicate. So that, and our waiters are trained. That's one of the reasons why they're supposed to know every ingredient in every dish on the menu, so that they can then say, oh, well, we need to modify this dish for you.
So it's doubly safeguarded.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there are probably a couple of allergies that are very difficult. And you mentioned one of them earlier, which was black pepper, because quite frankly, if you're truly allergic to black pepper, it's almost in everything we make. And the other one that's really hard are onion products. And a lot of people are allergic to onion product or have what was the other word?
By onion product,
not an allergy,
mean garlic,
or an intolerance.
Salad.
Intolerance. Yeah. Or they could have an intolerance to it. And, you know, I just beg the guest to not tell us they have an allergy if it's not an allergy. That's the only thing I would ask. Is, you know, because we do bend over backwards to take care of that. And if it's simply you don't like it, then just tell us you don't like it.
That's the thing I worry about for our business, is people becoming cynical about
right.
being told that something is an allergy. And if you're, you know, it's the crying wolf thing.
Right.
If someone tells us again and again and again all kinds of things, and there are all kinds of extra things, once there's enough noise, it's difficult to hear the real stuff. And if you're not paying attention, if you're not really careful, and you don't do a good job sorting out what are allergies, what are intolerances, what are dislikes, you can have a bad situation pretty quickly.
Well, as
and
I
once
said,
in a while,
we
guest,
take it very, very seriously in all of our kitchens. So, but all people in the industry do not work the same way.
Once in a while, the guest just hasn't paid attention, which is terrifying. The reason when we were talking to Amy Chen that I said the thing about anaphylaxis, I watched a guest sitting in a restaurant in Washington, D.C. in 1990, and he ordered a soup. It was a black bean soup, and the garnish in the bowl was shrimp. So the garnish is down.
Couldn't see
and, it. Yeah, black bean soup, a little cilantro. It's on the menu. It's written there.
Mm-hmm.
I remember very distinctly. And he just started eating the soup, and he had a shellfish allergy.
Oh, my goodness.
So he went, you know, had anaphylaxis reaction. And the paramedics come and take him away. And one of his colleagues at the lunch table, because they weren't disturbed at all.
Oh, my.
We completely freaked out. They weren't disturbed.
Wow.
And the one guy, he just turns to me and says, you know, it's the third time this has happened.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So,
okay.
Oh, my. It's,
mm-hmm.
you worry about it.
Yeah, for sure.
You worry about it.
All right.
So what is your favorite cocktail, by the way?
Haven't been drinking, honestly, liquor for very long.
I don't know if anyone believes that.
I don't care if you believe it or not. It's true. And so, therefore, I don't really experiment that much. But I will say that I really like Blood Orange.
I don't think anyone believes any of this.
Okay. I really like Blood Orange. And I love Blood Orange juice, whether it's reduced down with a little bit of fresh lime and sugar. Now, I know you want to be kind of careful adding anything sweet to a liquor drink, because that's just a bad recipe.
I ask you a simple question.
Okay, what was the question?
What is your favorite cocktail?
I don't have one. Oh, so I'm trying to make one up.
That's the answer. All right, that's fine.
I don't know. How about you? What's your favorite cocktail, Tony? Because I know you've had some.
You're exactly right.
What is it?
It's a whiskey sour with a special preparation.
That you're not going to
tell us
about?
No, you take a glass. Oh, you take a glass, and you take an orange peel, and you rub the orange peel around the rim, and you put whiskey in it.
Oh, that's a serious whiskey sour.
Yeah, I'm a little too something. So, a little too something. Well, here, right. Suffer through
chef
this.
Chef challenge.
Here's your chef's challenge.
All right. Arborio rice.
And my handwriting is lousy on it.
Ground
Please complain
lamb,
about it.
Mushroom stock, cremini mushrooms, arugula, celery. Oh, my God. This is a lot of ingredients.
Yeah, good luck.
25 count shrimp with the heads on. Those are sort of small shrimp. Red bell peppers. Oh, Tony. Cornmeal, aioli. Already made aioli? That's weird.
Why not?
Why are you giving me that? Basil, spice rack. Cucumbers, lemons. Is that a tangerine? Cilantro?
That is a tangerine.
Blue potatoes. Garlic, shallot, onion. Dairy, extra virgin olive oil. Tangerines, cilantro.
I knew the tangerine would
mess
you up.
Where's the meat on here? There's no meat other than ground lamb.
You really are Midwestern.
No, shrimps. Okay, all right. So shrimp. Okay, so it's going to be the 21-25 count shrimp heads on. I'm going to saute those. And then I'm going to finish.
Did you really just say, I'm going to saute those?
I did.
Is this like the Folgers coffee commercial?
I'm thinking ahead. I'm going to deglaze the pan with a little bit of fresh lemon juice. And off the heat, I'm going to add in supremes of tangerines and a little bit of the cilantro. And that's that. Okay, that's a dish. Maybe a little butter at the end. And then the arborio rice. So I'm gonna saute finely chopped
shrimp and tangerines.
Shrimp and tangerines with
Lovely.
Cilantro. Yummy.
Okay.
That's a good first course.
Very good.
With heads on the shrimp. Oh my God. All the fat's gonna come out of the back of the head and the shrimp while they're sauteing. That's why head on shrimp are so good.
I was just recapping.
That's gonna be good. So then I'm going to boil those blue potatoes. And I'm gonna serve that with the ground lamb. All right. So I'm going to dice the blue potatoes and boil them in salted water, and I'm going to mix that with the ground lamb. I'm going to finely chop and saute cremini mushrooms. I'm going to add that to the ground lamb and a little bit of the celery, and that's good. And do I have eggs, Tony? No.
No.
All right. So I'm going to mix all that with the ground lamb and make kebab. So what I'll do is I have spears at home. Am I making this at home? You didn't give me any situation. So I'm making
this
at home over
spears.
I'm making this at home over my wood fire. And so I'll pat that in and put that onto the spears and put it over the wood fire, which you need two bricks to hold the spears. And that'll be that. Oh, and the aioli would be good with that. So that's that. And then I'm going to make a little relish with the extra virgin olive oil, the finely chopped cucumber, fresh basil, and that'll be so good, and a little bit of the celery, and that'll go on the kebab. And the arborio rice I started to talk about, I think. I'm going to saute onions and shallot in butter, and with the arborio rice, I'm going to add, I have nothing left. A little bit of the cremini mushrooms, and so that way I can serve a little bit of rice with the kebab, and then the shrimp will be the first course. When I make the arborio rice with the onion and the shallot and the cremini mushrooms, you also gave me mushroom stock, which I didn't notice. So I'll make that with the, be quiet. And then, and with the arugula, I'll do a chiffonade of arugula and toss that in at the end with the risotto. That'll be yummy. Okay, I did it. Okay.
How many times did you either say yummy or yum or during the course of that?
Well, you know.
Chef's challenge. All right.
All right, Tony, you have a situation with yours.
Yeah.
You're doing dinner for 12 people at a cabin in the woods.
Great.
So you only have what you have here.
Do I like the people? That's the first question.
Yes, you love them. They're great. Those are super cool people. Otherwise, you wouldn't have them in a cabin in the woods with you, I don't think.
I
think it's pretty likely.
I can't imagine I would be in a cabin in the woods with
12 people.
But if it was for an admirable charity, I would definitely do
it. Oh, it has to be for a charity? No,
absolutely.
It's not a charity. You and your friends are in a cabin in the woods, and that's
Excuse
all the
me.
Product that you have there. Excuse
me. I would not be in a cabin in the woods with my friends. One bag of mussels, 5 pounds of monkfish cheeks. It's a band from the 80s. 2 whole lobster, butter, tarragon, tomato paste, brandy, cream, onion, shallot, garlic. So you just gave me everything for sauce americaine. Do I have brandy? Yes. Let's see. Risotto? It's already made?
No.
You mean arborio rice?
Actually, it's La Bamba.
La Bamba. That's nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the short grain, Spanish rice.
Right.
It absorbs so much stock. Button mushrooms, bay leaf, peppercorn. All right. Well, this is easy. I'm going to make one giant paella.
Mm, yummy.
So with a La Bamba rice. So, but I have to make a stock. So I'm going to use the lobster shells. I'm going to go outside and leave the 12 people by themselves to their own devices. And I'm going to create a fire in a hole in the dirt.
Uh-huh. Are you going to draw some water from the lake by the cabin?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm but I am going to cook the lobsters in the embers of that fire.
Okay.
And then I'm going to clean off the shells once they've cooled down. And I'm going to pull all the shells and I'm going to make the stock with those shells.
You're so exotic.
It's not exotic. It's kind of caveman.
Put the lobster in the embers of the
fire. Yeah, why not?
All right. Yeah.
No, I got all the time
I'm
in the world.
I'm not disagreeing with
you. I'm in the woods, for God's sake.
You're bored. That's the problem with you being in a cabin in the woods. You're bored.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's why I have first question
no
was,
cell
do
phone.
I like them?
There's no cell phone and there's no TV.
That's fine.
You're not a TV person, but.
That's fine. So. I'm a radio person, so be straight about it.
That's right.
The monkfish cheeks can be fried in the meantime. No, let's put everything in there. The mussels, the monkfish cheeks, the lobster. The mussels will go, the lobster meat will go in there. We'll use a little bit of the tomato paste. That's fine. So the brandy can go in there, or you can drink some of the brandy. Hopefully it's really good brandy. The button mushrooms. You know, maybe a little snack, maybe pickle those guys. Do we have the goods to pickle those guys?
No, you have nothing other than what's on
nothing.
That piece of paper. You're All in right. a cabin in the woods.
Then I'm not going to use the mushrooms. Sorry. White wine. What kind of white wine do I get to have?
Any white wine you want. That you brought with you, so, you know. Yeah.
Maybe there's a Spanish grape that's kind of obscure, Trechedora, from, or Godella, another one from the northwest of Spain. Those would be great with the paella I'm going to make with the mussels, the monkfish cheeks, and the lobster. Monkfish cheeks have got to get seared, otherwise the texture is going to be weird. And the lobster meat will be done and smoky. The mussels will be sweet. The mussels just steam open in the rice as they're finishing the last couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing I will not do is add dairy to this seafood rice.
Mm-hmm.
I keep seeing risotto on this page, and it's La Bamba. So do I have a pan?
Yes.
Do I have a rice pan? Yeah, that's great. So I can just build that fire again and
that'll be fun.
And cook that outside.
That's a treat.
By myself. And the 12 people can entertain themselves. Yeah, the tarragon will go in there. That'll be great.
Good.
That'll
all
be
right.
great.
Huh?
And then I'll serve it, then I'll do the dishes and they can all leave. I think that's probably all we have time for. So a reminder, if you missed any of this program or if you want to listen to any of the Foreman Wolf episode, I guess I could call it, or podcast. Go to the WYPR website, WYPR.org. Look for the Foreman Wolf page, and you can find this or any of the other arguments that Cindy and I have had on the radio. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Instagram as Chef Wolf or on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf.
Why did you make them different?
I don't know.
On Instagram, I'm the real Tony Foreman. And if you want to email the program, if you want more information, if you have questions, things you want us to answer on the air, let us know if you want to tell stories about your food allergies or about your favorite cocktails. It's Foreman Wolf at WYPR.org. Thanks so much for listening.
Happy Sunday.
Bye.